Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast.
Hey, this is Mark and Steve with you again this week. Steve and I, as you can see from the title, we've decided to tackle a pretty personal issue, if we stop and think about it. But this,
not at all.
Are you choosing life, or is it choosing you? And as we started to talk about this morning, prior to the podcast, the thing that immediately came to my mind is what I call my extended family motto. So I grew up in LA, and just about every Christmas and a lot of summers, we would go to visit our extended family in a small town. I'm not going to say where that was, in a different state, in a small town. And the family motto, whenever we would go visit all of those extended family members, was life sucks and then you die.
Oh gosh.
So that was the family motto. Okay. And I'm telling you, I've never been around a more negative, depressed victimhood. It's your fault. It's their fault. It's the world's fault. And it was a big, big influence on my life as I was growing up. And some of my immediate family, of course, by the nature of being raised in those environments, shared that as well. So I had real trouble as I was a kid and in my teen, even well into quite a bit of my adult years, I can admit it right on the microphone. Mark was a whiner. And I would get into my whiny mode, and it was what was modeled to me by, you know, all of those role models of extended and immediate family. And I learned to do that, right? And one of my favorite claims when somebody would call me on it, when I was just being, you know, negative Ned and jumping into this, you know, woe is me mode, I would say, hey, I'm a realist. This isn't about being negative. This is reality. This is the world. I'm a realist. And that was always my comeback. I'm a realist.
Oh my gosh. That is, honestly, that is the, I think it's funny that you're saying that, because we didn't talk about this before we started working on this morning. But I mean, that's honestly if my wife was in here right now, she'd say the exact same thing. When I was in my, back in like when I get in whiny mode, or when I've been there, you know, kind of used to live there. It very much was just like, hey, I'm just being real, right? like this is, it is what it is. That was also my favorite phrase.
That was another favorite one. Yep, it is what it is. You can't change it.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. So why does this plague us so much, man?
You know,
where does this come from?
I think it comes from a couple of places. One I've already mentioned, which is I think it's modeled to us in many ways from our immediate and extended family. And let's face it, we have a culture. We have a society that tends to perpetrate this negative approach as well. Just look at news, look at politics, look at so much of what goes on around us. And so it gets drilled into us. It gets wired into us. The other thing is I think it can be a very natural thing because we're designed, our brains are designed to do one thing above all others, which is to survive, to protect. Mm-hmm. So if I see anything dangerous or uncomfortable or not going my way or my certain outcomes or expectations are not being met, I can easily go to this place where it's just mopey, whiny, depressed, negative, pessimistic. There's a part of us that will naturally go there without any effort on our part. It's in the human system, it's almost a default mode, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You have to proactively do different, not go there, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's even easier when you know, it does come from, I think, upbringing, like you said, and family of origin. But I think also for a lot of our listeners, I know it was the case for you and me, I think a lot of that defeatist kind of attitude came from just being churned up in the consequences and the collateral damage, I think, of addiction and the shame and everything else.
Well, yeah, let's not discount that at all, because one of the biggest reasons I was very much into victim and helpless mode was because I tried to break out of addiction 1,000 times and failed 1,000 times.
Yeah.
So pretty soon you're just beat up. You're just done, exhausted. You got nothing left.
Yeah.
You know, and then I look at my wife and a lot of the women I've worked with over the years, and they're at that place or worse. Mm, I mean, whole situation just wreaks havoc on you until you're just kind of laying in a pile.
Well, it's progressive, right?
Yes.
It's progressive because when you know, in recovery, I think the biggest mistake that we all make in a general sense is we try to tackle problems associated with recovery or addiction or betrayal without the correct tools. And it's unfortunate because too often, I think too many of our clients, and I was one of these people, are because of various reasons are either unwilling or in some cases unable to find help or sources that'll give them those tools. And by the time that they're willing to go there, they've expended so much of what you're talking about that you get that couple in the room and they kind of look at you like that prize fighter that's just been, you know, knocked down 35 times this match and is just kind of like sort of lifting his cheek off the ground or just putting it back down. Like, I just don't even want to.
I
want to try again, you know?
Well, and I know I felt that way, you know, when I finally got to the place where I was learning the right tools. I remember when they were first introduced to me by some of my mentors, I just kind of looked at them with this tired, dejected, sort of negative look on my face. Like, really? You have more tools for me? Oh, great. Yeah, I'm sure this is going to work out. Because you're just like, I don't know that I even have enough energy to implement what you're saying.
Yep.
Because I've tried so many times. How is this going to be different? How is this going to give me a different outcome?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's easy to be in a cynical place. It is.
Absolutely.
It's legitimate. Yeah.
You know, my wife, my wife attends a particular 12-step fellowship who's, you know, I won't mention specifics on here, but they have a phrase that they use in there that I really have come to appreciate. It's acceptance is the answer to all of my problems.
Yeah. Imagine if you heard that back in your deep addiction days, that would have probably got some good flowery words coming out of your mouth in response.
It's yes. Like,
excuse me?
Well, and answer to all my problems. I don't know if it's the answer to all of my problems, but I would definitely say it's the beginning of the answer.
Yes.
All of my problems, right?
Yep, I agree.
Going back to the, you know, kind of this topic that we're tackling today of, are you choosing life or is it choosing you? You know, acceptance is a catalyst to be able to choose anything.
Mm.
You know, I can't, and we've talked about choice versus need in the past on prior podcasts. I can't choose something if I don't already recognize where I'm at and what choosing that thing right? Being at a better marriage, being recovery, being whatever. I can't really choose those things. Or I guess a better way to put it is my choice is limited by my ability to see and to accept my situation as it is, right? Where are things really at? And that, I think, breaks down into a couple of different components that I know we're going to get into.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a great point, because what ends up happening to us when life is hard, which it often is, and we just get exhausted and worn out by all of it, is we begin to live in two places. We either begin to live in the past, mm-hmm. because of all of the terrible, crazy things that have happened to us and the pain that we keep revisiting, legitimately so. And so it's very easy to go to that past all the time. Or we live in the future, either how bad things are going to continue to be, or having a fantasy about how things could be, you know, past and future. The place that we don't live is the only place where we have any power at all, which is right now. I don't live in the now. Yeah. And that's really the only place that you can choose your life. Living yes. in the past and the future is it choosing you.
Yeah.
And I stayed stuck in those two places, you know, that would interchangeably go back and forth for decades. And we come to the place where it's the only place I have any power is right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think if we're going to have this discussion, something that's important to distinguish between are these two concepts of was I a victim to something, or do I continue to be a victim to something? So in other words, you know, delineating between the difference between did something happen to me versus am I making choices or not making choices or taking action or inaction that keep me stuck there, right?
Yeah, and that's a really critical distinction, because we, you know, you and I would never want to suggest that things that have happened in the past aren't real.
Of course.
That they didn't cause extreme horrific pain. You know, that they should just suddenly be forgotten forever. We're not suggesting any of that. What we are talking about now is, what can I do now? What can I do now in this moment and to start myself moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the pain just, the blasted pain just keeps perpetuating itself. It just never leaves us. It just keeps piling on.
Well, we kind of become a prisoner to our own life. You know, we become, you know, trapped, not just in, we become trapped, not just by those things that have happened to us, our traumas, our, you know, past negative experiences, our past mistakes, but we stay there.
Yes.
And so this acceptance piece, yeah, it's important to kind of distinguish between that, because one man's acceptance can easily be construed as another person's, victimhood. Right.
True.
And I think when you're delineating between those two, the age old concept that I think we all go to, and those of us who have done recovery for a while, is the serenity prayer.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
God, accept me, you know, help me to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah, we've heard that, what, thousands of times? Back to my group therapy, we actually close our groups up with that.
Yeah.
Whenever we do that. And I think that prayer, it's easy to glaze over to it. Where it almost, you said before the podcast, that serenity prayer becomes white noise in the background. You don't even really
yes.
pay attention to what you're saying. But if we look at that and break it down, it really is powerful about what we're discussing today.
Yeah. Right?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. You know, and as we look at that, we think, okay, what does that mean? What are the things I cannot change? And why is it important for me to have serenity about that?
Yeah. Well, I think the first one is one that we talk about on here all the time, but we will definitely mention it here. And that is everyone else.
Right? Wait, no, that can't be true.
Like many of the concepts we talk about on our podcast, I think most of us recognize this intellectually, but a lot of us have yet to take the leap, at least in most areas or a lot of areas, emotionally, and really coming to a place of recognizing that, not just again as like a theoretical fact, but allowing our emotions and our frame of thinking to be guided by that, because we continue to devote so much of our emotional, mental energy, the majority of us, I think, to stuff that we have absolutely no control over.
Yeah. If he'll just change, then I'll be happy.
Sure.
Or if she'll just start doing this, then everything will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's not just those, but then it's like, putting energy into not just being a victim to it, but to resenting those things or those people, right?
Yep. When they don't change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
the outcomes the expectations I have don't take place.
Yes.
Like we like to say, you know, expectations are just resentments waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely true. I think the next thing that comes to mind is, you know, when it comes to things that I can't change, would be my own past, right? And that encompasses a lot, my own past issues in addiction, my past issues as a victim of trauma.
Yes.
And the things that I have been through, not just in my relationship now, but in past relationships, right? All of those things that have happened in my past, both the good and the bad, are things that cannot be changed, including those decisions that we make. And I see both sides of a coupleship when they're going through the recovery process too often fall victim to this. You know, the addict is caught in this perpetual sense of shame from a perspective of, I'm this horrible addict. I've caused all this damage. I've done all these things. You know, how could I have done this? And a spouse oftentimes is caught up in a similar dynamic, but from a betrayal side of things, right? I'm such an idiot. How could he have done all this to me and me not really known? You know, why didn't I pick up on this sooner? Why didn't I stand up for myself quicker, right? And what it all equates to, I think, is we very much what you kind of alluded to before, is we get stuck in our past. We get stuck in, I think I mentioned once on the podcast, Uncle Rico mode is what I call it, right? We're living back in 1985 and pointing to that and saying that's the cause of all of my issues. And if I could just go back and change it, things would be different today.
Yes. It's so true. Yeah. And I have, you know, I have family members, extended family members to this day that I love. But I just watch them. They live in the past and they've never been able to come out of it.
Yes.
I mean, these are people now that are in their 70s and 80s and they're still in that place and mm-hmm. they've never left it.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, Mark and Steve here. Are you looking to take your recovery and your marriage to the next level?
We work with individuals and couples one-on-one.
With both in-person and online therapy options, you have access to the experts anytime, anywhere.
To learn more, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. So I mean, there are probably other things that fall into the can't change category, but I think those are probably the two biggest culprits are other people and the past.
Yep. I would agree.
You know, other people, other institutions I don't have a tie to, and then the past. So just as important at looking at the things that you can't change, because those are all things which we, again, I talked about in another podcast that need to be surrendered, right? And given away. And we've done lots of episodes on that. But let's talk a little bit about the things that we can change, right? What is our sphere of influence? What can we make better or influence today in a healthy way?
Nothing. I can't change anything. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Like, that phrase, I don't know. Whoever came up with that ought to be drug out and shot. Not really. But it's just that phrase is so often, I think, just disempowering in too many ways.
I laugh at that because I think of myself back in my addiction years, and I'm kind of being funny right now, but if you started to go into this, well, let's talk about what you can change. Mm-hmm. I would have instantly gone into negative mode. It just talked about all the reasons that your formulas were, you're full of crap and this doesn't work. And anyway, so I kind of laugh about that. Like, what can you change? Nothing.
Absolutely. No, it's true. Well, and I think if you're going to look at the things that you can change, we have to kind of take on the other more important question, which sort of addresses, I think, the majority of situations, which is, you know, which parts of this situation?
Yes.
Which parts of this circumstance can mm-hmm. I change? Very rarely do I think it's ever a black and white. And us addicts, I know, speaking for us, one of the traits we tend to do is we, you know, quoting from Star Wars, we kind of deal in absolutes a little bit.
Yes, we do.
Very much black and white. You know, it's either I've got to change and control this thing to death, or screw it. I'm just going to throw up my hands. I'm done. Never going to work. Yep. Never going to change. Never going to be better.
Well, and I think that's where my old attitude of I really can't change anything came from. It's like when you say, what can you change? I'm thinking, well, I either have to change it all or change nothing.
Yes.
Absolutely. So what we're getting into here is there are certain things that you and I can own that are ours, and there are certain things that are not.
Yes. So,
you know, what's in my purview? What's in my space that I actually can change?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got a story. Okay. So, so early on in recovery, I was probably I wasn't quite sober yet. I was kind of in that pattern of really early where a lot of guys come and start seeing me of, you know, being sober for a week or maybe two and kind of falling back in. I'd been doing 12-step work and some therapy for a little while, but not terribly long, and was really caught in a heavy, deep, not just victim place, but like a dramatized victim place. Yeah. I was like full on Edgar Allan Poe, like death is all around us, drama place. And I remember, so I had my first sponsor had fired me because I wasn't working the program. Big shock.
Fired by a sponsor.
So of course now I had that on top of everything else. Now I had just one more thing to cling to in victimhood. I'm too crappy for recovery. Not even my sponsor will love me. So I'm total victimhood. Well, I found another one. And I really feel like I was led by my higher power to find him, because this was a no-nonsense guy. At the time he was in school to become a lawyer, and really, really nice guy, very rough around the edges, but didn't have a problem telling you where to go and how to get there. I didn't really know how much until this story, but it ended up being really good for me. So we'd been working together for only a couple of weeks, and like somewhere around week two, the classic withdrawal symptoms from the addiction set in. And I was kind of like in full Eeyore mode. And there were 3 days in a row. I remember it was 3 days in a row where I would call to do my check-in with my sponsor. And I think I got teary every single one, which isn't bad. Obviously, emoting is great. But it was from this very just shame-based, I'll never get better. This is too hard. I don't want to do it. Like, you know, da 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 da, right? Just kind of stuck in asking these questions that have no answer.
Right. And expecting and, sympathy and
yes, exactly.
You're gonna be okay, and you know, attaboy and pat you on the back. And
oh gosh, if we talk drama triangle, I was like gilding and like polished brass lettering the victim tip of the triangle, right? Yes. And so I'm just kind of in woe is me mode. And the first 2 days, he was actually really sympathetic and nice. And was very understanding and like listened and all those things. Day number three, and I don't remember why this was, because I normally wouldn't have done this. I'm in the car with my wife on this phone call. Mm. And I'm talking about these things. So my poor wife, she's driving, watching her husband in full on 2.5-year-old mode next to her in the car seat. That's what I should have been sitting
in the car seat. You're in the car seat.
I should have, because I really was. I was just, it wasn't just legitimate trauma. I was choosing to be a victim to these things. And I get halfway through kind of my, I can't do it, and here's all the reasons why. And here we go. He cuts me off. He's like, stop. And I'm like in mid-cry. And so I like kind of like sniff. I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, exactly. And he's like, stop. And he said, look, here's the deal, Steve. I care about you. I think you're a great guy. I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. The things that I am having you do have worked for me and worked for other guys. I can't speak to whether it'll work for you, but from where I'm sitting, it seems like you're basically coming up with excuses as all the reasons why these things won't work rather than trying them. And he said, so from my perspective, this is, if I was you, this is what I would do. Why not try it? Why not just try it instead of whining about it and figure it out? Now, like I said, empathy was gone now, right?
Yes, yes.
He's like, why not just try it? He's like, because worst case scenario, even if it doesn't work, where are you going to be any worse off than you're at now? He said, if it was me, I would do it, because if it doesn't work for you, you can always have your misery back. And then he hung up on me. Like, right. click.
You can always have your misery back.
And I was so pissed. Oh my gosh, I was so pissed. The next 3 days, I don't think I called it for like 3 days, and I just was so livid and angry. But you know, honestly, I look back, and that was a turning point, right? Because so often we get caught in that line of thinking in different ways where, and it's understandable. I have some compassion for myself because my line of thinking, my experience up to that point is that nothing will work, right? Nothing will change. But you have to be willing to entertain that idea that maybe it will, even if it is from that pragmatic standpoint. And I would say the same thing to just about anybody listening. I know that Mark and I, in our offices, in our clinics, but also here on this podcast, we ask listeners to do very hard, uncomfortable things. We don't mean to make light of them because they are a big deal and yeah. They are hard and they are scary, especially when you're going through them. But I do, and for maybe some of you this does, maybe it doesn't resonate, but I think that message of you know what, why not just try it, right? Why don't you try and make an effort in a new or a different way and try something? Take that step of having the courage to change those things that you can, right? Because worst case scenarios, you won't be any worse off, I don't think, in most cases. And your misery in whatever form it takes will always be there, you know, waiting for you.
Yeah. This is a hard part of the process. You tell that story with your sponsor. I had a really close colleague years ago, and I was in deep, deep addiction, keeping it secret from everyone. Even from him, we were partners. But he was pretty smart. He could tell that there was something going on. He didn't know exactly what it was. But I went into his office one day, just like you did with your sponsor, and I was in Eeyore mode, like full on. And I was just whining and complaining and talking about how hard things were and how I was such a loser and things just, you know, I don't know why things never work out for me. And he, and especially talking about all my sins, all my past sins and how, you know, God would just never accept me. And he finally just, he listened patiently. And then he looked me square in the eye with this really serious, straight look. And he said, shame on you. You think that you're the only one in this world that has problems? You think your sins are so special that you're the only one that Jesus didn't suffer for? Said, shame on you. You're arrogant and you need to repent. You want to talk about being angry? Here I'm pouring out my soul, hoping to get this, you know, pat on the back and a hug. And this guy hits me straight between the eyes. And I looked at him with a shocked look and I stormed out of his office. And I didn't talk to him for 3 days.
What's with this 3 days thing? We both don't know.
There must be a 3 day thing. After someone confronts you with the truth.
But no, well, and we'll just give the quick disclaimer. Please don't try to change yourself or your partner by using shame. Pull yourself out of shame by using shame is a bad idea.
Yeah, no, it's shame.
But it's very true, right? I mean, there is that element to it that is, and sometimes it takes experiences like that, though, even though they may be human, right? My sponsor was human, your partner was human. Even though these people may be human and flawed and the message isn't perfect, there is an element of that, I think, that we all need to experience to a degree, which is just to kind of shake us out of our line of thinking.
Well, and that leads into the final part of the Serenity Prayer, actually, which says, you know, help me accept what I can't change, see what I can. But then it says the wisdom to know the difference. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I could tell the difference between what I couldn't change and what I could were some of those really hard experiences, right? Wisdom comes through experience. And you can't get to that place of wisdom unless you're willing to open yourself to some of these really hard experiences.
Yeah.
And they hit you, man. That they take a 50-pound sledgehammer to your ego, and it doesn't feel very good at first. But coming to that wisdom of knowing the difference, really, we really need to be willing to open ourselves to begin to experience different things.
Yes.
Let me look at things that I haven't looked at before, right? It's, you know, we say, God grant me, you know, this wisdom to tell the difference. So it comes to where, am I willing to ask?
Yes.
Hey, Lord, I'm sure I can't see a lot of things about myself because I'm kind of in here and biased and blind. Will you help me see what I can't?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, don't take that lightly, because I found when I've asked that, it's like, whoa, 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 I didn't want to see that much. Like, hang on a second here. But if we start to be willing to open ourselves to seeing some hard things, character flaws and liabilities, you know, different poor habits that we formed over time, maybe our stubbornness or our unwillingness, you know, to see certain things. Can we open ourselves to that?
Yes.
That's where wisdom comes.
Absolutely.
And it's not easy. Boy, that's why the prayer uses the word courage.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of courage to become that vulnerable and open yourself up to these things.
Well, and I think that one thing that we probably ought to mention at the end, because this is a humongous topic, like many of the things that we talk about.
Yes, it is.
There's so much more that we want to say, and going off feedback from listeners, maybe we will, if you feel like this would be a good topic to continue to pursue. But I think that it is important to acknowledge that, you know, there is a validity and a, what would you call it? I guess just validity. There's a validity and importance to being able to grieve the past.
Oh my goodness, yes.
To be able to grieve your past choices, to be able to grieve those past things that have happened to you. In no way is this a suggestion that, hey, you just, you know, suck it up, buttercup, and just don't, you know, think about the past. It's your past, the people around you, those things are always going to be a part of your life to some degree or another. So I don't think it's about not feeling those things. I think it's being able to do it through that lens of self-compassion and be able to really grieve. But then the key word here is to then immediately be asking yourself that question. Okay, you know, this is unfortunate. These things aren't okay. What's been done to me isn't right. But what is my next right thing, right? Mm-hmm. How do I move forward in a with those things that I can change while having compassion for that past?
Yep. Where am I empowered in my life?
Yes.
Rather than looking at all the things I can't do or the ways I'm stuck, what can I do? You know, how can I move forward through this? Difficult and hard. The pain, you know, sucks. And I, you know, in many ways, I don't like the way I feel. And how can I, you know, we talk about leaning into our pain, moving through our experiences. And that's a very big part of this. And again, one of the things I really want to stress as we say this, Steve, is this is not a formula of me. If I try to do this by myself, what we're describing today, there's no way that I can succeed. It's just too much. It's too big. And mm-hmm. so we have to make this shift to we. You know, how can we do this? And that's where we start to pull in our support system. This is where we begin to be open and vulnerable with other people that we trust, mm-hmm. and ask them to help us to see maybe where we're stuck, help us to see possibilities and, you know, portals forward that we couldn't see on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not alone in this. Everyone listening, just don't try this alone, please.
Absolutely.
I did that for decades and ended up with a gun to my head.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. There's so many people that are ready and willing and able to be there for you as you look at how to do this.
Yes. No, absolutely. And I love that word that you've been using, you know, vulnerability, because that implies not just an openness and a transparency with others, but I think it most importantly implies of an openness and a transparency with oneself. And to me, that means being able to see our past and see our trauma and see our hurt and see our shame, but through a lens of recognizing and working towards a viewpoint that, yes, that is just one part of me. Those things are a part of me, but I am not going to allow that to define life for the whole.
Yes.
I'm going to allow my past and my trauma and the other things that I've experienced to inform my life going forward, not to dictate to me going forward.
Yes.
What will or won't happen. So
yeah, we come full circle back to our title, right? Are you choosing your life or is it choosing you?
Yes.
You know, and so our invitation to you then at the end of this podcast would be take some time to do some assessment. What are some of the things that perhaps you're stuck in that just keep revolving around and around and around that you just feel you can't change? And where can you make some adjustments, some evolution thinking of new possibilities, stepping outside the box and trying to get in tune with what you can change. What can I do? And just start to look at that, write it out, take a look at where you've been with that. And can there be a different path going forward?
Absolutely.
That can be individually. And you might also need to do that in your relationship as a couple. Right? Are we stuck in the past or dreaming of the future? And maybe we need to start looking at what we can actually do here and now in some small, consistent, ways and steps to begin taking charge of our lives.
Yes, absolutely. No, I love this, and we do have so much more we could say about this, but once again, we're over our time goal. So I'm going to use that phrase we hate. It is what it is.
It is what it is. We can't change it.
We're not going to accept responsibility for it. We're a victim to this podcast.
But we're going to stop adding to that situation and problem by signing off.
Yes. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. We'll see you next week. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. It's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.